It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 162 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And, you know, Tim and I both have the Denver System Open right on our mind, coming up right around the corner here.
Yeah, both of us are going to be at the Denver System Open, though some of us have to travel a little bit farther than others. I am super excited for this event, though, but there's also been kind of a shift in the metagame. We're starting to see some really menacing lists that have showed up in Extended, and we're trying to figure out, you know, preparing for this event, what should you do when you need to prepare for a very narrow metagame?
Right, so we thought we'd do ourselves a favor here and just try and solve our own problem here, work through it on air, so that we're both ready for whatever the Extended metagame has to offer.
Yeah, so we're going to go through a little bit of how we're preparing for the Denver System Open, what that looks like, and how to counter these big lists.
All right, so if you've been following Extended over the past few months, you've definitely seen the rise of the TIE Phantoms being extremely popular and successful at System Opens, as well as we have the new threat, the Han Solo, with many, many upgrades.
Yeah, both these lists have been on the rise. Han Solo very recently. The Phantoms have been a force even all the way back when we were at Glendale. They even saw a nerf right after that event, and they're still out doing very well, making a lot of appearances and top cuts. But we're going to dive a little bit into the specifics. But to start, we wanted to talk about what you should do when the metagame really starts to settle.
Right, so we wanted to generalize this because this is a pretty common trend we see in X-Wing. You know, after a format's been played for a while, successful lists sort of filter to the top and become a pretty popular choice.
So normally the thing that keeps metagames from settling out and becoming stagnant is new releases, you know, new ships, new upgrade cards, or point changes. And as we're getting further and further away from the most recent release, which was the new factions, the Republic and the Separatist Alliance, we're starting to see the metagame, especially in Extended, start to kind of settle out and normalize. And that's when we really start to see certain list archetypes really rise to the top.
Right. And so in a healthy metagame, you have, you know, lists rise to the top in popularity a bit, and then they get targeted and they go back down in how successful they are. And so you kind of have a ever moving target. But sometimes lists are strong enough to survive mild targeting. And, you know, the case is still out on these Falcons because they really haven't been put to the test in a high enough frequency. But the Phantoms, you know, they've been a known threat and continue to be successful. And so that's where you can get a pretty narrow metagame.
And in Extended as it stands right now, I think the two most threatening lists I see are the, you know, loaded out Han Solos and the Phantoms. But even when you go below that, there are still a few key archetypes that make up a lot of the other lists there. There's maybe more variance list to list, but they're still generally settled on the types of lists people are flying. And that makes it interesting when you're preparing for a major event like a System Open, because you have to decide, okay, how am I going to handle this? Because when you see a list really rise to the top where it's not only making a lot of cuts, but it's also going to show up a lot in the Swiss rounds, that means you're going to have to plan for encountering these lists at these events.
Right. So when you're preparing for a large event with a very established metagame, you have a decision to make. You know, you could fly that top list or one of the top two or three lists, or you could fly something else that still stands a chance.
And I'm not really in a position to say that, you know, choosing to fly a top list is better than trying to fly something to compete or vice versa. I think there's merits and reasons players would go either route. And there, honestly, there's no shame in when you see a really popular list doing very well to take that list to a tournament. I think that's a totally acceptable strategy. But a lot of the times there are players who don't want to fly the top lists, or they're not certain they know how to fly the list effectively, but they still want to compete at the event. So they're going to have to bring something that can, you know, fly up against these really menacing archetypes.
Right. So I think the simpler choice is flying that established, powerful list. And that actually then presents its own challenges. So, I mean, first off, you know, other players are going to be gunning for you. They're going to have, you know, their specific counters in mind. And so you have to be ready for the diverse threats people bring against you.
And what's interesting in a metagame that's settled out is that you're not going to really be able to track what those counters are going to be. So you have to be a little more adaptive. Whereas if you're on the other side of this and you're just trying to fly something that can stand up to the more popular lists, you're working against more or less a known threat. Whereas if you're flying these top lists, well, you might not necessarily know what the threats you need to worry about are.
Right. So, you know, one strategy there is, what would I do to play against this list? You know, say you're taking quad phantoms with Juke. You know, what is my plan going to be if I come across an old Terok trying to strip my green tokens away? And I don't think that necessarily means changing your list upgrades. It's more picking a flying style that can account for the various curveballs your opponent might throw at you.
And this can actually put a burden on players flying those popular lists, especially if they're not as familiar with the popular list, which I think is probably one of the reasons I don't want to necessarily fly whatever's most popular, because at a given moment, if I haven't been flying it for a while, I might not understand all the ins and outs of a list. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to prepare for all the counter lists people bring. The other flip side of this, too, is if you're flying one of those really popular top lists, you're also going to have to be prepared for mirror matches, which are usually not pleasant games to play.
Right, and really analyzing a mirror match, I think, requires a very deep understanding of the list. Sometimes it's simple, like just shaving a few points so that you outbid them, but other times it's really about a nuanced understanding of what is the key win factor of this matchup. You know, is it going to be arc dodging? Is it about that efficiency in the opening engagement? You really need to identify those factors and, you know, make slight tweaks in your list where you're not compromising, you know, the main elements that made it a successful list, but giving yourself a slight edge in that mirror. Which for Phantom players, that means cutting away all of your jukes so that you can outbid all the other Phantom players. Just a little hot tip there.
So I think it's fair to say that if you're flying a popular trendy list or a net list, whatever you want to call it, you do have to make some considerations, and there's a lot left up to chance too, because you don't know what your matchups are going to be. And if you're flying a list that's really at the top there, you're going to expect that in Swiss, you're going to get paired against things people are prepared to fly against your list, and that's going to make things difficult for you. So I think there's a lot of great reasons you do want to fly a popular list. Usually the interactions and the mechanics in those lists are really well tested and successful. So if you can master that list, you're probably going to do pretty well at the tournament. But Carson and I aren't the type of people who like to conform. So, you know, we're going to talk a lot about what you do when you need to fly something to compete against a top list.
Right. I mean, me, I really just don't like my list being targeted. So I want to fly something that I think is, you know, equally powerful, but not being targeted. So, you know, you're not flying one of the top, you know, two or three meta lists, but you still want to have a strong list that can compete. Don't bring some wishy-washy list to an event. That's step one.
Well, and I think it goes further than that, because I think you have to look at it as, my first point here is actually going to be kind of counterintuitive. When you're preparing for facing off against these top list archetypes, right now it's a loaded out Han Solo and Juke Phantoms. Don't over prepare for those matchups, because you can fall into this mindset where you get so fixated on certain lists causing you trouble, which maybe they will cause you trouble, that you can choose a list and over plan for those matchups, not knowing that you might actually face against those lists that much or even at all in Swiss.
Right. I mean, I think this is the most important point of the episode. We see this happens so often. We've both been victim of it, and I guarantee you there will be a lot of people at Denver saying, you know, I have a perfect Thai Phantom matchup, but I didn't see any Thai Phantoms all throughout my Swiss. You need a list that can still handle the field. You can't compromise your other matchups too hard.
Yeah, I think a good example of this is the loaded out Han Solos right now. Some of the builds that way, it's this Han Solo that's really high initiative, really good at arc dodging, and thanks to inertial dampeners can either make a really big move with a boost or just stop moving at all, and it gets to react to most everybody. One of the reasons it's so powerful is that it can have a very large initiative bid, so Han's going to be an I6 and almost always gets to move last and be very reactive to his opponent. And I can imagine a world where I could design a list that uses as high initiative as possible, getting sixes up there, taking an even more aggressive bid than Han, which would get down into, you know, 16 to 20 point bid, which is really high up there. I could design that list, something that I design to counter this loaded out Han Solo as best I can. That might seem cool. If I got all six rounds of Swiss paired up against Han Solos, I'd probably do pretty well. But that's not likely to happen. I need to have a list that will work against the entire field I expect to play against, not just the top lists.
Right. It's pretty rare when you can have a very extreme counter to the top lists and still be pretty successful against all the other lists you might face in Swiss. So the decision I usually make is looking at my flex upgrade card slots and identifying some minor changes I can make that can help tip the scale in these key matchups. The other way to do it is to identify key concepts that are pretty powerful against these key lists we're targeting, but in themselves are also just generally good things to take. Example is, you know, Force users tend to be pretty successful against the TIE fandoms because they have all those Force tokens to modify their defense dice, making Juke less relevant.
Or you can have things where if larger base ships, like medium and large base ships, start to become more popular, oftentimes talents that rely on bullseye firing arcs start to get more valuable because they're more likely to line up on those ships.
Right. I mean, that actually also works against the Phantoms. You know, when people are using formations, it's pretty easy to line up a bullseye on one of those Phantoms without really trying.
But the summation of this point, though, is that you don't want to overplan for the big matchups. And this is a mistake that I think both Carson and I can say with a lot of confidence that we've made in the past, where we get too fixated on a certain list or a certain couple lists and that we're not prepared for the other lists we're going to face off against. So I'm a big advocate for, you know, preparing for Swiss matchups. And if you make the top cut, awesome, figure it out from there. But I always like to bring a list that I think, you know, has enough versatility that I'm going to be able to handle a variety of different lists and try not to get too focused on a particular list matchup that, you know, maybe doesn't treat my list very well.
Absolutely. And hopefully that is good enough. One minor tweak that you can make to give yourself a pretty big advantage in narrow meta is understanding where important bidding thresholds are.
Yeah, the bid can be very important in X-Wing, being able to determine who acts first at a shared initiative or who shoots first. But it's not necessarily important. Where you really need to pay attention is in one case where your point total for your list is going to be very close to the point total of the list you need to compete against.
Right. I mean, obviously, in a mirror match, you're going to be very close. So that's a good example of, you know, identifying, is it worth shaving a point or two here? Is that going to give me a pretty strong edge in that mirror? You know, a good example is if everyone's at 199, you can kind of assume people might be at 198 the following weekend. So you should be at 197, something like that.
Have a little bit of foreshadowing. On the other extreme, though, sometimes right. You don't need to worry too much about bids. And this is, I think, really important because you might get used to flying ships that typically value bids. Maybe you fly a lot of ships at Initiative 6 or Initiative 5. But bids vary in importance from list to list. So in the case of Han Solo with R2-D2, inertial dampeners, Kanan, all that fun stuff, that list can value bidding a lot because it really wants to move last and react to everything. It loses a lot of its value if it moves and then other ships are going to move after it and be able to react to it. So it really values bids. But at the same time, even if you're flying a list that has a lot of ships that can often rely on bids, they might not be that important to your strategy, and the points might be better spent adding more upgrades to your list rather than spending a lot of time on a bid where you still might lose out.
Right. There's sort of two factors you want to consider when deciding whether or not it's worth keeping up in the bidding game. One is, you know, is it really worth it if I outbid these key lists? You know, how important is controlling who moves first or second? How important is it to be able to shoot first, or perhaps, you know, the system phase. Perhaps you want to control the system phase. Those can be key reasons where it'll be worth bidding. But you'll hit a point where, you know, what did it cost you to outbid these key lists? Like, the Han Solo and Jake lists have a pretty deep threshold for how low they can bid. And most lists can't keep up with that. Then you get to the point where you're compromising yourself and all of your other matchups because you just don't have enough meat on your list.
And this is a case where you do want to really look at the lists that are performing the best and just look at the general point ranges they fall into, because sometimes that can make these decisions really easy. You know, if you're running a list and you really only have the points to play with, you know, if landing between, you know, 196 and 199 points, if every other list is well below that, well, you might as well go up to 199 then, because it's not even really a decision at that point.
Right. And sometimes, you know, having those extra upgrades does give you an advantage in the mirror. I mean, a good example of this is going back to that Arizona System Open, where there were a lot of players flying Whisper, Soontier, and Redline. And the winner happened to be someone who's taking the most expensive version of it, having advanced sensors on Whisper, Philip Booth. And that extra 10 points, or I think 8 points at the time, gave him an advantage against the rest of the field.
Yeah, where suddenly that bid didn't matter so much. Having extra tech made the difference. I think the last point I'd bring up is one that is kind of hard. So maybe you enter a season and you get really familiar with a certain list type. It's doing pretty well. You have a pretty good tournament turnout. And then suddenly a list appears that is just tearing you apart. Lists like Four Phantoms or Han Solo, maybe they enter and you just don't have good counterplay to them right away. Your normal strategies aren't working. This doesn't necessarily mean that you need to change up your list right away, or at least you don't need to change how your list is composed.
Right. So, and this is, I think, the toughest point, because it requires the most effort on your part. And that's adjusting your flying style instead of your list. And this is something I do a lot. And it's my first approach when I see, you know, a new list rides at the top is, okay, I need to get a lot of practice games against this and figure out a way to be successful against it without changing my list.
And X-Wing is a game where, I mean, variance, we know, plays a really important role. And I don't see so much that hard counters exist in X-Wing like they might in other games where, you know, a certain matchup is just an automatic loss. I've found in X-Wing that tends not to be true. Certainly there are matchups that can become incredibly difficult, or if they get decided very early on, they can swing really hard against you. But oftentimes, even in a matchup that's not favorable for you, you can find strategies to help kind of balance that out. And, you know, even if a matchup's really not good for you, that's all the more reason to practice that matchup and see, you know, what are the opportunities I can take? What are the mistakes my opponent might make that I can take advantage of? That can be really important when you're playing against lists that your list wasn't designed to fight against.
Right. I mean, and, you know, just because one list is pretty successful doesn't mean you're going to play it, you know, all six of your rounds of Swiss. So if your list is doing well, but, you know, it doesn't handle one list too well, don't change your list. Just come up with a different flying plan in case you do have that matchup. And this can be tough, but it involves, you know, a lot of games practicing, understanding, you know, what are the key components of that list? How does it gain an advantage against me? You know, what are the key ranges I want to be at? How do I want to set up my obstacles? I think this is probably one of the tougher skills to narrow down, but when you do get it right, you know, it allows you to be a lot more resilient to meta changes because you don't have to come up with a new list every time a new threat arrives.
And you want to use every advantage you can get. And one of those advantages, not even caring about what the lists are, if you have more familiarity with your list than your opponent does, that's a huge advantage on its own, because that means you're going to be more able to adapt to changing environments.
Absolutely.
All right, so we thought it would be good to close this episode out by just taking a quick look at, I guess, what we think are three of the more intimidating top lists out there and kind of how we're preparing to face off against them. So the first matchup would probably be what a lot of people call the Fat Han. This is a Rebel Han Solo, heavily loaded out. Again, depending on Han Solo's pilot ability, his high initiative, inertial dampeners, which lets you spend a shield to make a stop instead of performing a maneuver, R2-D2 to get that shield back once you run out of shields, and Kanan Jarrus to clear the stress from the stop maneuver so you can take actions and keep stopping turn after turn.
Right, and so the two-ship version of this has, I think, a pretty deep bid that's not really worth bidding against. I think you're better off just taking more ships or more upgrades against them. But there are some, you know, key things you can consider in your list. You know, generally just having a lot of firing arcs and a high amount of hit points means, you know, you can cast a wide net, create situations where he can't escape your arcs. And, you know, the Falcon is only rolling 3 attack dice back on you. It's only 2 ships. So if you have enough hit points, you can weather that storm for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest strength of the Fat Han list is that it's so good at arc dodging and reacting, but its biggest weakness is that the damage output does take a lot of time, and if you have a list with a lot of hit points, that's going to mean that ship has to expose itself occasionally to some damage in order to keep damage on you. So the strategy I'm actually valuing right now is having, you know, they don't have to be high initiative, but a decent number of low initiative ships with good attack dice, lots of firing arcs, and lots of hit points, where I think over time I can catch that Han in arc, even at distance, and just deal that damage out and eventually take it off the board.
There's also some subtler things you can do, you know, equipping something like seismic charges attacks Han in a unique way where, you know, Han really likes being near those obstacles. So you can make the Han player make some tough decisions whether or not they want to risk being at range of the seismic charge to take some damage or get their obstacle reroll bonus. And also you just eliminate obstacles, making it harder and harder for them to find areas where they can get that reroll each turn.
And while these sound kind of like effective strategies, I still think this list is probably one of the most intimidating out there just because there's not a lot of great ways to counter it. At the same time, though, I do think it is very susceptible to players making mistakes. So if you see a lot of these in Swiss, it might be people who have just picked up the list. So there's opportunities there where you could maybe take advantage of a misplay here or there, or a Fat Han falling into multiple firing arcs. At the same time, though, in the hands of a good player, this is going to be probably the hardest list to beat right now in Extended.
Now, of course, we have the 4 Juke Phantoms. One of them doesn't have Juke because of the points adjustment. But that's fine. It's still a high volume of jukes making your green dice very difficult to block hit results. It also just has a really high action efficiency, you know, with the decloak granting that evade token means they can also just use their action to get a focus. So really hard to push damage through on a focus evaded ship. Plus, there is the unique play style that Phantom players have adopted.
Yeah, I think Phantoms fall in an interesting category because they seem kind of like a swarm, but since they're able to decloak and move in such a tight formation and quickly, you know, change direction, they've kind of transitioned from just being a swarm list into kind of a mobile fortress where, you know, traditional fortressing isn't actually illegal in X-Wing rules of just sitting on one board edge and bumping into yourselves. But since these ships can move so tightly and they can decloak in one hard turn, they can effectively stay in a pretty tight area and still be able to keep their formation and move in quickly when they have to.
Right. And so that's one of those where practicing against it and understanding their movement really helps a lot. Of course, whenever a list heavily depends on green tokens, we have a lot of ways to deal with that as well. You know, Scum has pilots like Old Tarok or Polyp that just take away those green tokens and say, not for you. There's also just the jam action, which is pretty potent at disrupting those key evade tokens from the Phantoms. It's pretty funny. If you just jam one of the Phantoms and take away its evade, that really messes up how they move together. Because if one of them can't cloak, then it's going to have to break away from the formation.
The Phantom lists are also having an initiative cap of just 4, and that leaves up a lot of opportunity for higher initiative ships to take advantage, because you can actually assemble lists that have some pretty decent initiative 5 or higher ships that can compete pretty well. Because the Phantoms, now they have a lot of firing arcs and they throw out a lot of dice, although they're not heavily modified, they can still get out positioned, especially by really good ace play. So there are opportunities there where, you know, especially like Jedi who have access to the Force to help counter the Jukes, they have a pretty good chance against the Juke Phantoms.
Right. I really like the hate upgrade here in Extended because, you know, okay, if you're able to slip any damage through with your Jukes on one attack, the rest of them aren't going to get damaged through because I got that Force back up again. And if we move over to hyperspace just for a little bit, you know, we have the Rebel efficiency lists really doing extremely well. And of course, with the addition to B-Wings to the Rebel Alliance, we see these really efficient Rebel builds be very successful, but they also have a tendency towards low agility. And that's, I think, the best way to prey upon these Rebel lists. You know, you take a list like the TIE Swarm that has a high volume of low attack dice attacks. Well, those attacks are all going to connect and deal damage when your opponent's only rolling one agility in defense. And that means you can make these B-Wings quickly disappear.
Yeah, and while we'll see a couple higher initiative ships here, a lot of the initiatives for the Rebel efficiency lists fall in the four or lower category, so there are opportunities there to initiative kill ships before they get a chance to fire back, or maybe fire again on the second turn. That's going to be a really core strategy there, so you need something that can put out damage and at least survive the first volley of fire.
Absolutely. You just got to out-efficiency them.
So hopefully you guys have some better ideas here for how to prepare for a more narrow metagame. This is a very real future for Carson and I this coming weekend, so I guess we'll have to put our ideas to the test and see how well we execute on them. Hopefully we'll do pretty well in this event.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that my plan to just dodge the tough matchups will be pretty successful.
Bet on the Force, and hopefully we won't have to play any Phantoms or Hans.
Absolutely. Works every time.
If you guys are at the Denver System Open, if you see us out there, be sure to say hi. We always love talking to people who listen to the show. So if you see me or Carson there, be sure to come up and talk to us. Maybe not during a match, but anytime in between or after.
I don't care. You can bug me whenever.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoyed the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going onto patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully we'll see some of you at the Denver System Open. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.